From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Brian Kilmeade's show. I'll be Brian Kilmeade throughout the show, as far as I know. This hour, we're going to be joined by Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, author of The Case Against Nationalism. We've got a brand new story out about this election. President Harris would be a transformational left-winger. And he also talks about Trump being Trump and how that could help. Believe it or not, usually people feel the opposite because they have he's got a lot of issues on his side, but he doesn't necessarily have the media. How about doesn't? We'll talk about that and also track the latest, what's going on in the world today, including the developing story of this Chinese national, it looks like, or Chinese spy that was located through two administrations over in Albany as an aide to the governor of New York. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I don't believe that either President Biden or anyone serious about achieving peace and achieving the release would seriously ask Israel to make these concessions.
Yeah, absolutely not. The Prime Minister 100% right. Take it or we leave it. Biden team pushes Israel to take a ceasefire deal or we leave the negotiations. Even if it sacrifices security, really? As Prime Minister Netanyahu feels pressure from home and abroad.
Number two.
As a Jewish student, do you feel safe walking around Columbia University's campus?
I do not. I'm a visible Jew. I'm Orthodox. I wear a Star of David around my neck. I know that's putting a target on my back.
Shoshana, that is a student at Columbia University. It's worse than ever, guys. Protests aplenty in New York for Hamas, all in the name of terror, as Columbia is overwhelmed on campus and around campus, and Jewish students can't help but feel threatened.
Number one.
I think it's a sign of a good leader that they learn and evolve over time. You know, whether it's a move to the middle, the left, the right, it's really about what works. Kamala Harris is a pragmatic leader.
Really? Tracking the trail. Harris is avoiding interviews and formal policy statements as she heads to New Hampshire, then to debate camp, as Trump and Vance fan out and speak out, doing any interview possible, big and small, to lock this November win 1 week before the first and maybe only debate. Brett Baer joins us now. Brett, do you believe this is going to be only one and done?
I hope not, Brian. I think there's a real possibility that there could be two. You know, they said in the release that they would do one in October, that you would see them both on the stage in October. Obviously, we're trying to be that October debate. But it depends on how it goes, I think, and where she is come, you know, mid-September.
You know, a couple of things have amazed me. Their refusal to do any interviews or even pull asides where you do an event, come out, throw some questions at them. Just like Joe Biden started an international uproar by answering a question. Is Netanyahu doing everything possible to bring a ceasefire deal? He said no. I mean, it seems to me the only conclusion I can have is they are afraid the vice president is going to speak.
You know, she avoids reporters. She did the other day with the earphones. You saw VP nominee Tim Walz ask specifically, and he definitely heard the question about the six hostages.
Terrible.
And then said goodbye, folks. I think there is this effort to avoid questions. I mean, if she wants to practice for the debate, one would think taking more questions is probably the way to do it. It's just I think they think a vulnerable spot after CNN.
What's interesting is they do send surrogates out. I mean, you got Andy Beshear out yesterday, you got Mark Kelly out yesterday. Over the weekend, you got Jared Polis even yesterday. So they send people out to talk about these alleged moves in positions. But listen to how some of them are explaining her big change, especially when it comes to immigration. Cut five, Mark Kelly.
In 2019, she raised her hand during a debate when the Democratic candidates for president were asked, do you support decriminalizing illegal border crossing? She did raise her hand. I understand her position now is more to the center or more even conservative. Does she need to explain that?
Well, I think she has explained it. I mean, you're talking about a primary in 2019?
Yes.
Where somebody asked, you know, throw your hand up.
Yes.
And, you know, you got like a half a second to think about it. You know, today, what really matters is who is standing with the Border Patrol agents. and that's Kamala Harris.
Really? She's standing with Border Patrol. Someone should tell the Border Patrol. They all endorse Trump. I think that's not an overstatement. Almost 95% of them. And number two is, do you think that a quick decision should not be held against you?
Yeah. Listen, there are a lot of those things that people say, oh, yes, she's already switched. But there's not really in her voice a different sentence. I mean, what she told Dana Bash was, my values remain the same. And then she said, I clarified, for example, fracking on the debate stage in 2020. Well, if you look back at the exact phraseology in 2020 with Mike Pence, she said, Joe Biden will not ban fracking. So, listen, there's a lot of things that she still has to explain. But I do think that they think the longer they go, the deeper they are into early voting, into riding the vibe, the better they are poll-wise.
So, you know, with the ABC debate, if it's going to be similar to CNN, they're going to kill the mics in between, correct? That's the rules right now. That really worked to Trump's advantage because, number one, you got to fill up the minutes you get. I didn't think the filling up the minutes would be an issue, but it was with Joe Biden. It could very well be with Harris, too. You've studied this stuff. I know you're prepared to do a debate tomorrow if you had to. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a big issue. I think she wanted to have the mics open to have those moments that she had with Vice President Pence, which was, I'm speaking, and don't interrupt me. And we'll see how this goes. I she could also be very, very prepared. Republicans need to realize that this is a different candidate and someone who, you know, will take time off the trail to study and won't arrive like Joe Biden arrived to that debate.
Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. I think the thing with the Trump camp is doing a lot of these interviews in the town hall tonight. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, Trump still got more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016, and he seems to be polling better than he did in the last two elections. However, there's a lot of dispute about how you even up your numbers more. What do you think is the conventional wisdom as how Trump improves his numbers in the places he has to, since everybody on both sides admits it's too close to call?
Yeah, I think his ceiling is pretty firm, it seems like, and most of the pollsters believe that. I think they are hoping for some air to come out of the Kamala Harris balloon, and it may already started to happen. I think that he has to have a solid debate and then probably stick to script on policy going forward. His biggest problem is, you know, everybody knows him. And oftentimes, you know, he says something, does something that takes the news cycle in a negative way for independents and suburban women.
Your thoughts about his IVF for everyone stance?
You know, it's a political move. It solves a political problem. But tell me what conservative is ready to pay for IVF for everybody?
I mean, he's getting beat up.
Are you paying for it?
Yeah, he's getting beat up on women right now in terms of almost every poll. It seems to be like a men against women election almost. And I think people go right back to Roe v. Wade. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think safety and security, I think immigration plays into that. I actually think the health stuff with RFK Jr., believe it or not, can affect women, you know, when they start talking about food and, you know, things that that women are concerned about as far as children eating. I do think that matters. And RFK has been kind of a benefit for all the negative that surrounded him on some of the things he said. He's been kind of a good advocate on the trail so far.
I think we've kind of forgotten who the good guys or bad guys are with the Israel-Hamas war. I sensed it with you even a little bit yesterday. And when the president just casually walks up to a rope line and takes some questions and said what he said about Benjamin Netanyahu could be doing more on negotiations, I think the ripple effects of Titanic and Israel and Hamas celebrates and Iran high fives. Here's what Netanyahu said when that word got back to him. Cut 24.
I don't believe that either President Biden or anyone serious about achieving peace and achieving the release would seriously ask Israel to make these concessions. We've already made them. Hamas has to make the concession. Thank you very much. Toda rabba lachem.
He's 100% right. And one of the things they talk about is the Philadelphia crossing between Gaza and Egypt. They're not leaving. They got 9,000 miles. They're not leaving. They're going to have a presence there. We had John Spencer on from the West Point War College yesterday, and he says there's between 100 and 200 tunnels they found. So if you're Israel and you want to stop the next attack, it's hard to say it's a good time to leave, right?
Yeah. And listen, there's no let up in Hamas, what they're saying, what they say and pledge they'll do again.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an existential threat for Israel. So it was just, it's tough when you have six hostages executed, shot point blank range, and then the onus is on Israel to negotiate more. I think, you know, there are a lot of people scratching their head about that. You know, that said, the Israelis took to the streets. They want this done, but they also want security. So it's a balancing act.
Lastly, on the assassination with President Trump, the more we find out, the more ugly this gets, in my view. And one of which Josh Hawley says their investigation has been run by whistleblowers. They're getting very little cooperation from the FBI. And this is what he found out yesterday from a whistleblower that he relayed last night. Cut 31.
I'm told that actually agents, Homeland Security agents, were pulled off of child exploitation cases, child endangerment cases, the stuff they normally do. They don't normally do protective detail work at all. They were pulled off those cases, said, here, you're going to go guard the former president of the United States. Watch this webinar. Oops, it doesn't really work. Oh, that's all right. Go out into the field anyway.
It was a webinar to give them a once over. They weren't even Secret Service agents. Then we find out a local police chief, a local policeman was the one who shot the gun out of the gunman's hand before he was killed. So we're finding out a lot of stuff late.
This is ridiculous. This is so many days after a former president of the United States was an attempted assassination, and we still don't know. It's the most amazing thing. And why are there not massive calls for more information? I mean, in part, it's because it's Donald Trump, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's just remarkable that we don't know, and then we're finding out things that we thought we knew. In other words, that a Secret Service sniper shot him first. They're not true. And I think that there is much more to this story that we do not know, and we have to keep digging.
So Congressman Crow, as well as obviously Walt and others, and we have other people very experienced in the military on this. Brett, am I crazy to think this could be bipartisan? Could they actually have a bipartisan, dogged review of this to get to the answers?
I think it's possible. I listened to them. They're all those lawmakers on that commission are serious, it seems, and kind of dogged about trying to get to some conclusion, because that cannot happen again. You know, you had Joe Biden come out and say the Secret Service tells him he can't go in crowds anymore because it's not safe. Is that because the Secret Service can't protect him? What's happening as far as our ability to protect our leaders? You know, usually we're the best in the world at this. And I think that there's got to be bipartisan cooperation on that.
Lastly, you did an interview with Condoleezza Rice. We haven't seen much of her lately. Really good interview. It aired on Labor Day. Your thoughts about the former National Security Advisor and Secretary of State. How do her views hold up in your view?
You know, she's just really smart. She gets a lot. She understands things, nuance of different things. She said, if anybody thinks there's moderates in Iran, they're sadly mistaken. You know, they're delusional. If anybody thinks that Hamas is going to stop, they're delusional. Now, her issue and the essay that she wrote is about fighting protectionism and, you know, nativism to the extent that it affects our place in the world. You know, that's not a popular view in the current political environment, but it may be over time if the world starts going south and needs a leader.
I hear you. Thanks so much, Brett Baer. Have a great show tonight at 6 o'clock. Check it out. Brett Baer, thanks so much. Special report.
We'll see you.
1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back and take your calls in a moment. Bottom of the hour, Rich Lowry will continue to expand on those storylines we brought up. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, I think this has been the dynamic from the moment she emerged as a candidate, John. She is the turn-the-page candidate in this race. At least that's the way it's been so far. There is a weariness with Trump and Trumpism and frankly, a desire to turn the page on this whole era. And she has offered herself as the way to do that, as the vehicle to do that.
Well, I mean, that's David Axelrod spinning it out. She's offered a new way to do that, even though she's on the ticket and in power right now. So that's why James Carville and experts like David Axelrod are saying don't even bring up anything about Biden. Don't be afraid about separating yourself from the administration and go by the first name, not the title. Don't be the vice president. Be Kamala. So you be new, you're younger, and let people be duped by the fact that it has been 12 of the last 16 years been all about you guys. It's been about Obama, mentored Kamala Harris, picked Joe Biden. It's all about them. You got 4 years of Donald Trump, whose 4 years rate much higher than Joe Biden's and Kamala Harris. They're one team. She wants to come in without any, literally, without any policies, nothing on her website, give out bullet points. Bullet points are today $50,000 to any small business. Really? And 25 if you want to get a home for the first time. Is that a payoff or a program? I mean, these are ridiculous. So you want to be the change candidate in name. Like yesterday, evidently she did a cooking video about talking about different spices, which if you've done 10 hard interviews, go ahead, go on with Rachel Ray if she's still at a show. Go on with Drew Barrymore. Of course, show the personal type, but that's all she's showing. I get a lot of emails in. I'll read some of them to you. Here's one. It says, Trump missing opportunities. Trump continues to gamble the November election essentially entirely on himself. This is a risky strategy. It makes no more sense than asking voters to pull a lever, pull all of their finances into one stock. He needs to let people know who is going to be on his talent portfolio. I said this earlier when I thought he was going to be stuck in court. I would like to know exactly who your Treasury Secretary is going to be, who your Secretary of State nominee is going to be. Tell me who your National Security Advisor is going to be. Tell me who's going to be at Secretary of Defense. And when you fan it out, look out, when you see Rubio, Cotton, DeSantis, when you see Robert O'Brien and others, you'll say, wow, he's got some talent. I like those other guys. I like those other women. I like Lisa Stefanik in there. You know, I like to know that Zeldin's going to be in the mix. And then people say, you know, you got the Trump team. You don't just have Trump, so if his personality, you either love it or hate it, you go, well, look what he did last time. He's got even better people this time. Rich Lowry, when we come back, on how President Harris will be a transformational left-winger, big time, only controlled by the Senate.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
U.S. Steel is an historic American company. And it is vital for our nation to maintain strong American steel companies. And I couldn't agree more with President Biden. U.S. Steel should remain American-owned and American-operated. And I will always have the back of America's steel workers.
Really? Since when? Because you approved it. Your administration approved the sale of U.S. Steel to Nippon in Japan. And you say, well, it's an ally. That's it. U.S. Steel wants it, so you're going to do it. So now, after a year ago, when Trump heard about this initially, when he was still in the primary, he said, you can't do that. You've got to stop U.S. Steel from being sold. It's not in our interest. Why would you want another country controlling steel when it's all has everything to do with our weaponry? You know, we got to control our own steel. I thought that's why we were tariffing Europe. But this is the latest example of her taking another one of the Trump issues, including taxes on tips and building a wall at the border. And I think it's just the beginning. I really believe in the next few days, she's going to say health insurance should be paying for IVF. And I'm sure I'm not kidding. I made a sarcastic comment 2 weeks ago when she first decided to take taxes on tips without attribution to a Nevada crowd. And I said, what's next? She's going to build the wall. She's actually going to build the wall. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, joins us now. Hey, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
I mean, Rich, are people going to point this out? Do you think that there's really that naive people in America that don't know that Donald Trump said that first?
Well, they're counting on people being naive, and there are a lot of naive people out there. I hadn't thought about the IVF thing, but that is a natural. She can't let Trump get to outflank her on that one, so I wouldn't be shocked if that's the next one. I'm not with the – I don't consider it a big threat if a Japanese company owns U.S. Steel, but I'm a minority when it comes to both parties on that one, apparently.
Right. You're for a total free market?
No, I just don't think an ally owning a steel company that's no longer the most important steel company in the U.S. and is a great deal for U.S. Steel. I mean, they're probably overpaying for U.S. Steel. Just does not set off alarm bells for me.
Would they move it out? That's key.
I don't know.
That would be key because if you lose workers. But I mean, we know that that it was a big time to salute labor, and Joe Biden was on the campaign trail. Why can't anyone tell Joe Biden to go away? Why didn't they tell him not to run for re-election? Then he shows up because he wants to go to Pennsylvania and scream the whole time. And he talked longer than his vice president, who is the nominee, kisses her on top of the head like she's a junior partner.
Yeah. I don't get why the Harris people agreed to do that. Some people say, well, Biden has residual strength among older white voters and union voters. But still, the name of the game here is disassociating herself as much as possible and being the fresh new thing who's advocating for a new way forward. Anything that reminds people that she's part of this current administration that they consider a failure is a huge loss for her. James Carville had an op-ed in the New York Times yesterday. I thought gave pretty good advice to her. And one of the pieces of advice was distance yourself from Biden. Find separation on policy. So it makes no sense to be embracing him.
And of course, if you're Trump, that's exactly what you want to do. You say vice president. Yep. You don't say Kamala. You say you're this administration. You make sure she doesn't, unless she's going to come out and say, well, Joe Biden was wrong on this. He didn't listen to me. I dare her to say that. That'll be enough of a fracture. Not that he's as popular as Obama, but enough of a fracture to start messing with the foundation of the party and people to examine again how he was ousted. And keep in mind, I don't think she was behind it. There's no indications. But when you saw George Clooney overseas break from promoting his movie to say that Joe Biden is George Washington and selfless, when he's the one who began the push over the cliff, George Washington selfless? George Washington said, I'm not running again. They begged him to. He said, I can't. The country's going to be divided. I'll have half the people, the Federalists voting against me, the Anti-Federalists disliking me, so I'm not going to do it. And he said it in his farewell address brilliantly to associate George Washington and Joe Biden, who said the only the Lord Almighty coming down would stop me from running is nuts.
Yeah, so the big difference, right? George Washington could have run again and would have won a sweeping victory and could have kept on running and winning sweeping victories forever. And he didn't want that. He thought that would be wrong, a terrible president, and we shouldn't do it. Biden could have kept running but would have lost, right? And that's why he's gone, and he was forced out. So the comparison is preposterous on multiple levels. And either George Clooney missed his calling, by the way, as a columnist, you know, should have been a movie star, should have been a newspaper columnist, or someone wrote that New York Times op-ed for him that really helped keep the ball going on the getting Biden out. That was kind of a key event. And then Pelosi, I think a couple days later or sometime that week, also said that Biden hadn't decided. And I think she was clearly the most important figure in getting him out. But he never should have said he's going to run again. That's what created this whole situation, and that's ultimately on Joe and Jill.
Okay, I want to get to Hamas, and I want to get to your take on where we go from here. And the fact is we're blurred the line with who the good guys are. But I also want to get to your column that talks about what type of President Harris would be, because it's no short way forward. I mean, she would be, you talk about transformational. It's not that she would go center left. She would do a lot, and you wrote about it, including pack the court, if possible, if the Republicans don't get the Senate. Get rid of the filibuster if the Republicans can't hold the Senate, which they'll have for 2 years, but they'll have a hard time holding it beyond that. Go ahead. Why don't you expand on that, Rich, that you wrote in National Review?
Well, even if you put aside all the stuff she's flip-flopped on and say she's not returning to any of the stuff she's disavowed from 19 and 20, and she's just going to do what she says now, the spending and tax plans themselves would be hugely consequential. And then you have Chuck Schumer on the record with pretty much every Democrat who's running for a Senate seat or is currently a senator saying they'll eliminate the filibuster to pass a pro-abortion federal law and pass a so-called voting rights law. Now, they can't do that unless they get a majority, but if they get a majority, they're definitely going to do it. And once you've reached the legislative filibuster for those couple of things, you're not going to stop. So everything they want to do, they're going to try, including court packing, including, I think, part of the conversation would be bringing in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. as states. You know, they'd come up for some reason why democracy depends on four new instant Democratic senators. So it would be Katie bar the door. And, you know, they can only do that again if they take Congress, and maybe Kamala will get elected and they won't. But this is a hugely consequential election.
I also would, you know, if you get rid of the filibuster and they'd have to wait 2 years and then see if they could grab the Senate back, if Montana does flip. And we know West Virginia's already flipped for the most part. And we know that Michigan could flip, too. And there's hope in Arizona. I guess Carrie Lake is trailing now. And there's hope in Ohio because it's mostly red. But it doesn't seem as though Bernie Moreno is making enough progress. But let's say they only have a one-seat advantage and it flips back in 2 years. If they'd go through a simple filibuster, couldn't they do immigration reform?
Oh, yeah.
And couldn't they legalize all these illegal aliens?
Yeah, they could do anything. You know, I don't think there's a Manchin or Sinema left in the bunch, and people can look at their fate. Neither of them are Democrats anymore, and neither of them are going to be in the Senate anymore. So that's a pretty strong message. So I don't think there'd be many dissenters on any of these things. So it's Senate control is absolutely crucial.
Right. So what does she support? We know that she has flip-flopped on the border wall, decriminalizing border crossings, Medicare for all, mandatory buy gun backs, fracking, offshore drilling. She's hijacked no taxes on tips, don't sell U.S. steel and build a wall. Those are hijacked from Trump. So the question, she has not done any of this formally. It's through surrogates, through price controls. We know about that. We know about 25,000 for first-time buyers. Now we're about to find about $50,000 out of close to $1.7 trillion for small business, which is outright buying votes. So when Jared Polis, is one of the surrogates out there, was asked about, just for the example, the wall. Listen, cut three.
I mean, she called the border wall a medieval vanity project, a stupid use of money, and said that she would block funding for it. So she wasn't talking about supporting, the wall.
That's true. The border wall that Donald Trump has proposed is a huge boondoggle and waste of taxpayer money. He effectively talked about a wall across the entire border rather than using barriers of different kinds effectively in a cost-effective manner, including imagery from satellites, including on-the-ground intel to secure and lock down the border. What Kamala Harris is for is securing it in the most cost-effective way possible to stop the illegal flow of people, of guns, of drugs across that southern border.
All right, so we just know he's full of it. He can't defend it. It's never been explained to him. And she is going to be building this thing called a wall. It's bollard instead of stainless steel. But that's about
it. It's not called the wall. It's called barriers. Did you hear anything he said?
My fault. Yeah, that's my fault.
The reason why she called it a medieval vanity project, the reason why walls do go back to the Middle Ages is because they're so effective. They're so simple and they're so effective. You know, yeah, it was a medieval technology, but it kept Constantinople safe for about 1,000 years because they had really good walls. So the wall is not the be-all or end-all. You need a rational asylum policy and a bunch of other stuff, but it's obviously a huge piece of this. And they're now confessing, admitting that, although they just won't use the W word.
So what is your impression of the debate? What do you expect from Kamala Harris? She has had one interview. We'll probably only have that going into the debate. Really doesn't answer any questions. So in that interview, she seemed very scripted and very conservative. Your thoughts?
Nervous when challenged. I am not as bullish, all that said, on this debate as I was on the first one. The first one, I thought, outside of the possibility of Trump, of Biden totally face planting, and it surprised me how much Biden face planted, but I thought Trump really didn't need to make a case against Biden. People are ready to fire Biden. He just needed to seem reasonable and acceptable himself. So it was a low bar. And of course, Biden did face plant. This one, she's going to be really prepared. You know, she's not a natural at this, but she's been memorizing note cards, I would expect, since the call came from Biden that he was endorsing her. You know, she rehearsed showing up at a dinner party in Washington, D.C. several years ago. So there's no way she's showing up unprepared. And Trump needs to be ready for this, take it extremely seriously, and just realize this is the 90 minutes he has to expose her. And if he doesn't do it here, there's going to be no other opportunity. So it's high stakes. He needs to take her down a couple notches, make a real strong case against her and for himself as well.
Here's a little of her and Mike Pence. Cut 18.
No, but Susan, this is important. I want to add, but if, Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. He will not raise taxes on anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year.
He said he's going to repeal the Trump tax cuts.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. In 1864.
Well, I'd like you to answer the question.
No, yes. Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
She's not going to be able to do that. They're going to kill the mics. So that's her strongest line. Wow, a woman stands up to a man. I never heard of that.
Yeah, you know, the whole play is I'm getting interrupted and I'm getting condescended to. And then you have the clips of that, and that's what people play rather than your difficulty explaining your flip-flops. So, but again, you know, it's Trump's got to – every minute of the space got to matter. And he can't afford to waste any opportunities tomorrow next week.
Here is what Chris Coons' advice is. Cut 15.
The more that she stays calm and deflects his almost certain to come unpleasant, negative, personal attacks, the more she just brushes it off and makes it clear that he's not getting under her skin, the more likely it is that he will spout some of his more unhinged conspiracy theories, some of his views on the world and society.
Is that a scenario you could see?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're going to bank on, clearly, is hoping she can set off Trump on something, you know, going to Stormy Daniels, going to convicted felon, something like that, which I hate to say was actually in a terrible debate. It was a pretty good moment for Biden. There is a couple exchanges there where he seemed to have Trump back on his heels and that kind of stuff. So she's going to play that up. And, you know, Trump, he's got to try not to take the bait and just bring it back to her and her unsuitability, that she's part of this unacceptable status quo and that she's too liberal and too weak.
And he brings up the civil cases that came from your administration. There's nobody's going to tell me different. The 34 counts is really one count. And if you want to talk about morals, let's talk about your husband and how he ended up divorced. Would you bring that up?
I would not, but Trump might.
But if he comes at you and said, while your wife was pregnant, you were with the hooker, he says, really? What about your husband was with the babysitter and got her pregnant? Should you say that?
I wouldn't say it, but there's a chance Trump might say it. And it's amazing how the story basically, it made no impact whatsoever. You know, an affair with a staffer, which is in effect, you know, someone you're employing, which is way, way out of bounds. But he gets to be, you know, the second gentleman in good standing because he's a Democrat.
Well, I mean, just because it has not been brought up, and the convention, I think, was the next day. So if they're going to go out to your personality, do you bring that? You wouldn't bring it up. You wouldn't advise him to bring it up. Forget about Rich Lowry.
Well, it's also, you know, it's the husband. It's not her. And I just don't think it could be a good deflecting point in a debate, but doesn't really get you anything at the end of the day. She needs to be made unacceptable over her own weakness and phoniness. And that's the key thing. And then her policies are disastrous. That's the center of gravity in this whole election and should be in the debate for Trump.
Yeah, and we'll see if you get it to foreign affairs, she should fall apart. Not only does she not know it, but she's already committed herself to being in the room when all big decisions are made.
Yep. Bragging about being the last person in the room in the Afghan withdrawal. It's one thing being the last person in the room when, you know, the decision's taken to get bin Laden and we get him.
Right.
But one of the most humiliating episodes in recent American foreign policy, to say it was correct and brave is just astonishing.
It is. Thanks so much, Rich. Pick up National Review, get his latest column. He also talks about what's happening with college without affirmative action. Very revealing, especially when you look at what happened at MIT. Thanks so much, Rich.
Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to Rich Lauer and Brett Baer for joining us. Let's go to the phones, 1-866-408-7669, or you can write me, BrianKilmeade.com. Let's go to Chuck in Maryland. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I think we are absolutely asking Kamala the wrong question about fracking. The question should be, are you willing to remove all the current restrictions and actually promote fracking going forward? We're letting her get away with saying, no, I won't ban it, and then restrict it so badly she, in effect, bans it.
Well, the thing is, it is, you're 100% right. So that should be his follow-up. Okay, so what about restrictions? Well, I don't want him drilling on federal land. Really? On federal land? Well, look how you expanded federal land. And also, Chuck, nobody brings up that they're on a big pause right now in LNG. We have all these terminals. We got this situation where we are providing LNG on a good, dependable rate to all our allies in the Baltic nations and Japan. And we stopped because he was worried about his green left flank. And as Governor Shapiro said in an interview about a month ago, he said, well, are you concerned about the pause? And he said, yeah, if it continues. And when the speaker asked him about the pause, what are you doing on LNG production? He said, we're just talking about it. He goes, no, you did it, Mr. President. That was before he was forced to drop out, because I guess God Almighty and George Clooney made sure of it. And also, Speaker Pelosi. Brian Kilmeade Show, so glad you're here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome, everybody, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show. Yes, Manhattan, where they tell us that illegal aliens don't commit more crimes than any ever average American, but 75% of the crimes in Midtown committed by illegal aliens, and we're now paying them, get this, $4,000 if they would just leave the shelter. It's a pilot program given to 150 people, just like the debit program. We will not give you free food. We'll give you money to buy your own food. And we'll see how that pilot program goes. It costs the taxpayers a ton. No wonder why everyone's leaving. Bottom of the hour, Dr. Casey Means is going to be with us, Stanford-trained physician, co-founder of Levels, a health technology company that is striving to address what they call the world's metabolic health crisis, and co-author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Good Energy. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen is standing by. Before we get to him, Big Three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I don't believe that either President Biden or anyone serious about achieving peace and achieving the release would seriously ask Israel to make these concessions. We've already made them.
Yes, they have. Take it or leave it, I guess. That's what Biden team is pushing Israel, to take a ceasefire deal. Or I guess we're leaving the negotiations, even if it sacrifices security. The prime minister is supposed to sign off on it. I wouldn't.
Number two.
As a Jewish student, do you feel safe walking around Columbia University's campus? I do not. I'm a visible Jew. I'm Orthodox. I wear a Star of David around my neck. I know that's putting a target on my back.
Protests aplenty in New York for Hamas, all in the name of terror, as Columbia is overwhelmed again on campus and around campus, as Jewish students overwhelmingly say they feel threatened.
Number one.
I think it's a sign of a good leader that they learn and evolve over time. You know, whether it's a move to the middle, the left, the right, it's really about what works. Kamala Harris is a pragmatic leader.
So meaning moving to the Trump issues makes you a good leader? Tracking the trail. We have Harris avoiding interviews and formal policy statements, heading to New Hampshire to debate camp after that, to Pennsylvania, and then Trump and Vance fan out and speak out, just doing every interview possible, and we'll start do their own I guess, debate prep, hoping for a November win. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, a key surrogate for the campaign, Armed Services Committee member. Senator, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian. How you doing?
All good. Senator, first off, your thoughts about and what you're hearing about President Trump's preparation for this debate and this opponent, because it's going to be dramatically different from Joe Biden and I think from Hillary Clinton.
Well, it is going to be different. And I think he's got someone helping him that obviously knows Kamala and knows how to totally destroy her on the debate prep and that's Tulsi Gabbard. Is helping the president with debate prep. And I don't think you can have anybody better than that. Listen, the big thing is we got to get Kamala off her script, right? She's actually got to speak other than just off of talking points. I don't think she's going to want to do that. And I think she's going to keep it very elementary is when she starts talking about policy because she can't talk policy. And President Trump's got to, you know, obviously make her be there, and hopefully those asking the questions will make her answer some of the questions. She'll try to do everything she can to walk away from it, but she also gets rattled really quick. And when she gets rattled, I think there's a fine line to do that. You know, it's one thing for the president to go out and attack Joe Biden. It's a little bit different when debating the VP Harris. Just because of the gender break between the two, not trying to be sexist with you, it is different though. It turns a lot of people off when you see a guy attacking a female in any type of way. So it's delicate, but I think the president is taking this very serious. President Trump is taking this extremely serious. He's been having multiple debate preps with Tulsi, and what I've been hearing is just going great. It's going really good.
Right. Here's what Governor Beshear said Harris should do. Cut 16.
And I think it's as simple as letting Kamala be Kamala. She has her own views. We are all different, even if we've been a part of an administration, even if we're in the same political parties. We all have different nuances, different ways that we were raised, different things that we feel more passionately about.
Really? So I think that's what Axelrod is saying, and James Carville is insisting. She divorce herself from Biden, begin to separate herself from the administration. I guess from your point of view, make sure she doesn't.
I actually hope she does. I know this sounds different, Brian, but because she is actually liberal. You know, I've said this multiple times. Joe Biden was a puppet for the progressive liberal movement. She is the progressive liberal movement. I want the American people to see who she really is. Mind you, she's had this morph of all of a sudden trying to be this moderate and be something to everybody in just the last few weeks. People actually need to see who she is as a person. They need to push her on her policies, on her ultra-liberal progressive policies. She was more progressive than – and by the way, when I use the word progressive, remember, progressive is one step towards socialism.
Yep.
She was more progressive than Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders is an open socialist. When she spent her 2 years in the Senate, she was openly to the left of Bernie Sanders. I don't know how that's even possible, how you get to the left of Bernie Sanders, so I hope she is – who she really is, because right now it's confusing people on who this person that we're seeing talk and who and what her actions have been in the past. They're not lining up.
But one
and
thing,
so
she's really
I hope they see it.
Yeah, it's only through surrogates do we have policy, and yeah, that, you know, little things like $50,000 for small business. What's your reaction to that?
It's a joke. It's trying to give money away to buy votes. There's no substance to that. For instance, if you're going to give $50,000 away to every small business, what qualifies as a small business? Is that S corps? Is that LLCs? Or are you going to set it a dollar amount, and then all of a sudden you're going to start picking winners and losers? And then that doesn't even talk about how you're going to pay for this, Brian. I mean, this could talk –
$1.7 trillion. $1.7 trillion.
$1.7 trillion because, remember, 50% of the economy is on the backbone of small businesses. In Oklahoma, 75% of our economy – is actually small businesses. But who's going to make that definition? Is she going to use the SBA? to define who the small businesses are, because let's just talk about if you just use S corps, because that's typically S corps and LLCs are typically your small businesses. But at the same time, you use like Bass Pro Shop, something in Cabela's, some place that I've truly only place I really like to go shopping. That's actually an S corp. So would you consider them a small business? I don't know if you could actually consider them a small business. Love's Truck Stops, which you see Love's anytime you travel across the United States, you see Love's Truck Stops everywhere. They're considered an S corp. I don't know if I'd actually consider them a small business. Now, they're business owners and they employ hundreds and thousands of people. So where does that break stop? I hate it when the government gives money away. By the way, they never give it away for free.
Right.
You and I pay for it.
Yeah, it's easy to give away other people's money. When it comes to the voting preference, it's like 50-46 nationally. No one really cares about national at this point. It's individual states, and almost every battleground state is too close to call. Having said that, the one area in which Kamala Harris has a prevailing lead is among women. 54-41 ABC poll. It's bigger than some other polls. When you guys sit around, the door closes amongst Republicans, you think how to close that gap. Where do you look?
Well, it obviously you got to talk about the abortion issue, which is why you're hearing Trump bring that up. And in 2020, the Republicans got targeted as being extremist. And I don't think trying to say babies is an extreme position. I tell people all the time, you know, as someone that has three adopted kids, and I always say we got three that we got stuck with, three we chose, meaning that with three we adopted and three came through biological means. I thank God almost every day that those young women that chose to give life to those kids that give me an opportunity to be loved by them and me to love them, I thank God for that. But we still have a problem there. And then you have President Trump, who has an issue with suburban women, which is why this debate prep is so important in how he handles himself, which is why he's taken it so serious. It's amazing to me on how he's able to dig down on issues, which that's a complete separation from what you see from he's digging in. I mean, he's digging in and taking things extremely serious. One thing that President Trump hates more than anything, and that's losing. The guy is a winner, and he prepares to win. He doesn't take it for granted. One thing that's a big difference between what you hear about President Trump and VP Harris. VP Harris has always been accused of not being prepared because she feels like she's the smartest person in the world. Remember when she said AI is two words, AI? That's common for her. So we have a lot of work to do with suburban women. We've had that problem before, and I think that starts with some of the issues that are important to them and also the demeanor that we address some very sensitive issues, and most of those issues are social issues, not policy issues.
I want you to hear Mark Kelly, who, like Andy Beshear, like Jared Polis, has to go out and explain what she thinks because no one else is. She will not do it. It's bizarre. But listen to this exchange, cut five.
In 2019, she raised her hand during a debate when the Democratic candidates for president were asked, do you support decriminalizing illegal border crossing? She did raise her hand. I understand her position now is more to the center or more even conservative. Does she need to explain that?
Well, I think she has explained it. I mean, you're talking about a primary in 2019?
Yes.
Where somebody asked, you know, throw your hand up.
Yes.
And, you know, you got like a half a second to think about it. You know, today, what really matters is who is standing with the Border Patrol agents, and that's Kamala Harris.
You want to take that on? I mean, I could 20 different ways, but I just wanted you, first off, somebody in that position, you go to debates because someone wants a quick decision. Does that mean you shouldn't count it?
A quick decision is never that one, decriminalizing people that are criminals. I mean, illegal, that definition doesn't change. And for someone that was set on the bench, for someone that prosecuted criminals, she knows better. So there's no excuse for that. Mark is a very smart guy. I serve with him on Senate Armed Services. He is obviously a better debater and explainer than Kamala. That's why he's out there. There's no excuse for that answer, period. What you saw is her true reaction. You know, I tell people all the time, if you want to see someone's true behavior, either put them in a stressful situation and see how they behave, or absolutely wear them to the bottom and see what their natural reaction is when they're working off of muscle memory. And that is what you saw of her. That answer is what she believes. The Democrat Party wants to give amnesty to all these illegal immigrants that are here. And they've been open about this. Back in 2014, I was working with Joe Kennedy at the time. We were both members of the House. And Joe and I was working through kind of a program that would incentivize workers to come here legally and be able to work with employers that couldn't hire people that were here because it was strong in labor, farm, whatever that area is, landscaping, construction work. And as we were working through the process, there was a bipartisan working group, not just Joe and I, there was a bipartisan working group. Nancy Pelosi at the time came up to us and said, what is this that you guys are working on? It's amnesty or nothing. That was in 2014. You want to know why they have never actually proposed real serious immigration reform, even when they had full control of the White House and both chambers in Congress, is because they want amnesty or nothing. That's where they're at, and her policies fit that policy.
You know, the whole Senate deal, the bipartisan deal, would you have voted for it? I know Lankford's your buddy. I think he's a great guy. Would you have voted for it?
If they actually engaged with us, the problem that they did with Lankford is Lankford was a one leg at a three-legged stool. He was trying to negotiate with the White House and the Senate and had no room to actually negotiate on because he was the only Republican at the table. Chuck Schumer, they keep throwing Lankford underneath the bus because they say it was a Lankford bill. It wasn't the Lankford bill. Chuck Schumer never once allowed us to actually debate it or actually bring up amendments on it. It was a take-it-or-leave-it process. You don't do that. There is no bill that can come to the floor that on the Senate side or on the House side that you can say take it or leave it and something that important. So it wasn't – I was looking to go yes. I mean, that's where I start. I started looking to go yes on any of this stuff because I believe in negotiating. I want 110%. I'll negotiate at 70%, and I'll walk away at 69%. The problem was is in this process, there was no negotiations. And Lankford was hoping to bring it to the floor. What his job was is he was supposed to bring it to the Senate floor. The House had H.R. 2, and they were planning on going to conference. So then that's when real negotiations took place. They wouldn't allow it to go to conference because they wouldn't even allow debate to happen on the Senate floor. So there was no bill right. that was ever in the process that we could support because they killed it from the beginning. Because as I said, they want amnesty. They don't want immigration reform.
But they did get a talking point out of it. So that's what you're constantly, that's what president's got to be, the former president's got to be prepared to answer that question. Not just it was a bad bill. What was bad about it? Because maybe right. it's the threshold thing. Maybe it's the fact that unaccompanied minors are not addressed. Maybe it's all this money to NGOs who's going to make the problem worse. So there's a lot there I saw Marco Rubio just destroy it.
Yeah. So, well, for the president, he's got three things, and I'm not going to answer his question for him, but he's got three things that he can point at that's really strong on those issues. You can pick out about two dozen things, but you get too wonky and people don't remember that because, the American attention span is pretty small right now. And we're talking about retail politics, not policy politics, this election cycle anyways, which is why you have the talking points from Harris and not policy issues.
Got it.
So the president has three strong points to make on this if they will allow him to make it. And so he will be able to make that point. He's very prepared for that answer and for that question.
Senator Mark Waymon, people of Oklahoma are lucky. They have a can-do senator who tries to be part of every major decision. Senator, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Brian. Talk to you later.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll take a break and then take your calls. Then Dr. Casey Means is next, co-author of the number one bestseller in the country.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Anthony, you're in Vermont. Anthony.
Hey, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to ask the Armed Services Senator this question. I've been asking a lot of folks this question. How come Hamas is hanging out in Qatar? And they've been hanging out in Qatar. And Qatar, or Qatar, however you pronounce it, is getting a pass from, like, everybody. Why aren't we hammering Cutter?
We're afraid of losing our base there. And we thought,
is that what it comes down to?
And yeah, I think it is. And I think Israel says, at least we know who to deal with. I'll deal with people over there because, like it or not, they are in control of their enemy. That was prior to the attack. I'm not too sure, Anthony. I haven't lost my patience with them. And the fact is, it's not okay to have Iranians go visit now dead foreign minister, go celebrate with the now dead Hamas leader. And after the October 7th attacks, and we have to witness it and see that and then negotiate with those people. So I think my patience has run out, and I think it's time to call them into play. But that's the story up to this point.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
One of the issues that he talked about was having safe food and ending the chronic disease epidemic. Our children are now the unhealthiest, sickest children in the world. Don't you want healthy children? And don't you want the chemicals out of our food? And don't you want the regulatory agencies to be free from corporate corruption?
And that was RFK, got the biggest applause after he decided to endorse Donald Trump. Not that they agree on everything. They agree on that especially. I think they get along personally. On the healthy foods and finding out what we're eating and why the numbers are going up and why America is fatter than ever. Yet we know more about fitness. We are working out a lot, but it's just not working out for us. Dr. Casey Means knows all that. She was with us before. Her number one best-selling book, Good Energy, is still selling huge. The surprising connection between metabolism and limitless health. And Dr. Casey Means joins us now. Welcome back, Casey.
Brian, so great to see you.
Congratulations on all the success, but we kind of knew it when you were in here because people were giving you what type of response to your book?
You know, the Americans are sick and tired of being sick. We understand that there are so many levers of our policy right now that are against American health. And like RFK said in that speech, American health is getting destroyed and Americans are tired of it. When you just look at the statistics, it absolutely speaks for itself. Children's health is worse than ever. 40% of children are overweight or obese. 36% of children have a mental, emotional, or behavioral disorder. Autism rates are 1 in 22 in California. 18% of teens have fatty liver disease. Young adult cancers are up 79%. We're on track to have 1 in 2 American adults with cancer in their lifetime. This is absolutely astronomical. And it is a historic moment that at the highest levels of politics, we are now calling this out and talking about the rigged institutions that are making our country a fertile ground for childhood chronic disease.
Right. So Dr. Casey Means with us also. If you want to watch on the app, you could see it. You could watch it on Fox Nation, but she's on Skype and you know, we're always streaming. So when you heard RFK talk, does he get it? Does he know what you know?
RFK gets it completely. He has been fighting this battle for decades. He's been fighting it in the courts. He's gone up against Monsanto. What RFK really understands is the nexus of pharma, ultra-processed food, industrial agriculture, and government, which is keeping Americans sick and which we need to unpack this nexus in order to make Americans healthy. He's hitting all the key points, the conflicts of interest in our government agencies, the lack of regulation around the toxins in our food, our water, our air, our homes. He really does understand the many factors that are keeping Americans sick.
So do you remember in the 70s, I'm older than you, but, you know, parents used to smoke. Smoking's down very low now. I mean, everyone used to smoke in the movies, smoke in the car with the windows closed. And, you know, we didn't worry about what our cars were spewing out of the tailpipe. And we did find a way to clean up our air, we thought, to clean up our waters, we thought, and to have a healthier lifestyle. Where am I wrong?
Yeah, this is exactly right. And I think a key point that you're bringing up does have to do with the cigarette industry. What a lot of people do not know is that the ultra-processed food industry that is keeping Americans sick and dependent on the healthcare industry was created by the cigarette industry. Two of the largest mergers in the 1980s, once the favor for cigarettes started declining, two of the largest mergers in history before the 1990s were in the 1980s, and it was R.J. Reynolds and Philip Morris, two cigarette companies buying processed food companies and then using the same playbook that we looked at for cigarettes, make the product addictive and cheap and apply it to processed food. In the 1980s, we saw skyrocketing of the ubiquity of ultra-processed food, and this coincides when Americans and especially children started getting very, very sick. So same playbook applied to a different industry, transferring the scientific knowledge of addiction right. from one to another as one fell out of favor. And now we're seeing what the repercussions of that are, with 75% of American adults over the age of 55 having a chronic illness tied to food. This is costing our country 90% of our $4.3 trillion healthcare budget. 23% of the largest GDP in the world is going to healthcare, which 90% of it is going towards chronic illnesses related to food. Every American taxpayer should care about this
issue.
So
you're saying big pharma, the food industry, want us sick to make a profit?
It's a devil's bargain, Brian. The two of the largest industries in the country, and healthcare is the largest and fastest growing industry in the United States. It's a business that's designed to grow. It's a $4.3 trillion industry. This is the simple economic, unemotional reality. It makes more money when patients are sick, and it makes less money when patients are healthy. Right now, one of the other largest industries in the United States, which is the ultra-processed food industry, is leading to chronic illness. And so right now we have two industries that, unfortunately, even with the best intentions of the people in those industries at the individual level, they are both economically benefiting off patients who are sick and dependent on ultra-processed food, then getting sick and are sick and dependent on the healthcare system.
I mean, the numbers are overwhelming. They're indisputable either. 74% of Americans are overweight. 77% can't serve in the military, even if they were drafted tomorrow. And I'm not sure if it's related or not, but you mentioned that autism number right up top. You say one in, and can you give me those percentages again?
One in 36 American children now has autism. In California, where I live, that number is one in 22. This is up astronomically in the past 24 years. And, you know, this is a
condition. It used to be one in 1,500. 20 years ago?
It has been 1 in 150 in recent years. And then decades ago, it was 1 in 1,500. And it is skyrocketing.
So, and your belief that food has a lot to do with that? Because, you know, we hear things about inoculations and vaccines, and they say that's been disputed and it's unrelated.
Many of these diseases are multifactorial in nature, but what we have to understand that the small bodies of children being born into this world, starting in fetal life, are being born into a toxic stew that they are not being protected from. And this is across all levers of society. We are over-medicating children. 70% of a child's diet is coming from ultra-processed frankenfood filled with chemicals that are banned in other countries. They are banned in Europe. Many of the chemicals that are in our ultra-processed foods, like food dyes and preservatives that we know have an effect on children's behavior and brains. We look at what's happening with the food also in terms of pesticides. There are 6 billion pounds of these toxic pesticides being sprayed on this food that then is going towards children's ultra-processed food. So, Brian, the bigger picture is that kids are being born into a toxic stew of many forever chemicals, endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and chemicals that we know impair neurologic development across food, environment, and medications. And their bodies are getting crushed. And as adults and policymakers and media, we need to have the moral clarity to say enough is enough. Kids are too sick with preventable illnesses, and we've got to clean up the environment. We've got to protect our children. And, you know, I am so deeply encouraged that this conversation is being had clearly at the highest level of government, and it's becoming over the last few weeks an election topic. This is going to be on the debate stage, and I think we can all feel very grateful for that.
So Dr. Casey Means with us, co-author of Good Energy, along with her brother, books number one in the country. So can you give me a definition of a processed food?
Absolutely. So an ultra-processed food is a food that is created in a factory. It's made from various extracted and adulterated parts of other food that are put together like a puzzle into a Frankenfood that's really never before been seen in nature. So it's taking constituent parts from other whole foods that have been broken down and then remodeled into a Frankenstein-like food, comes from a factory packaged, often filled with preservatives and colorings to make it hyper palatable. This is an invention that, again, only started becoming ubiquitous in the 1980s. So it's not like we've had these forever. It's not like this is the only thing kids will eat. They're brand new. This is now making up 70% of the calories that we eat. And so this is the types of things that's lining all the middle aisles of the grocery store, the things that are in the boxes.
And they taste good, right? That's part of the attraction.
They are designed. They are weaponized and designed by food scientists to take you to your bliss point, to be hyper palatable, and to include ingredients that turn down our satiety mechanisms to make us eat more. You look at a Pringles box, it literally tells you right on the package, once you pop, you just can't stop. It's designed to have all the components to activate your reward circuitry so you want as much as possible, and to sneak in ingredients like high fructose corn syrup that actually we know biochemically make us more hungry. So these foods are designed to get you to eat nutrient depleted, pesticide cover food with chemicals that make us feel like we're insatiable. And this is why ultra processed foods are why Americans are eating themselves to death.
Do you believe the system is curable? Do you believe if an RFK gets in there, he could take that knowledge that you've done and scientists alongside you be able to go in there and streamline a process that is so fortified?
This is absolutely solvable, and truly everyone can be a winner here. Industry, people, and children. But we need to move back to eating real foods. I do believe that there are some simple policy changes that we could make in our country that could happen in the first year of an administration that could absolutely turn the tides backwards towards American health. And I think the political appetite is strong for that right now. We know Americans are sick of this. They are cheering at the rallies. They want to hear about getting rid of the toxins in our food. They want to hear about a cleaner, more sustainable food system. So I think the appetite is there, the political will, and some of the policy solutions are being presented right now. And it's very, very exciting.
And where do you shop? Where do you buy your food?
Farmers market. The best place that anyone can shop. There are 9,000 farmers markets in the United States. And the key point about the farmers market is it's the freshest food and the least toxins. The freshest is important because fresh food has the most nutrients. As a food travels 1,500 miles from a factory to your plate, it's losing its nutrients every single day. And as it gets processed, it's losing nutrients. Our cellular biology, the reason we're all sick, kids and adults, is because our cellular biology is broken by the lack of good nutrients that we're getting in our food. So buying food as local as possible, as clean as possible, without the pesticides and the additives is one of the best things you can do to give your cells the power to do their best work and minimize chronic illness. If that's not an option, then of course, buying at something like a health food store, Whole Foods, with organic and unprocessed is great. But truly, for people who don't have access to either of those, unprocessed, real food, not in a package, ideally organic, is an incredible.
You know, it's also sinful. They put all that fast food and horrible food in most working class areas, most hard up areas, where it makes it their diet is even more challenging and makes it affordable. Saying, okay, that's cheap, I'll eat it, but then they feel then they get unhealthy and they don't necessarily have the health care to fix them. Have you noticed that?
Well, this is where policy comes in, Brian. So with some simple fixes, we could fill these neighborhoods with healthy, fresh food because industry follows the money. So right now on public assistance food programs like SNAP and WIC, 10% of that food is going straight to soda and over 50% is going to ultra processed food. So we allow people on public assistance programs to funnel that money towards food. We could incentivize those programs to get better value if you're buying real food. We don't do that right now. Number two, our farm bill subsidies are what make those unhealthy foods cheaper. Almost all of our food farm bill subsidies goes to commodity crops not healthy foods, commodity crops like corn, wheat, and soy that are turned into the backbone of ultra-processed food. So taxpayers are not only paying for the farm bill subsidies that make the toxic food cheaper, they're also paying for the food assistance that goes towards processed food, and they're paying for the environmental externalities of that toxic food production, as well as the healthcare costs of Americans who are getting sick because of the processed food. So as taxpayers, we need to make this a key issue because we're paying for it on all sides.
And get together with farmers. What do you think about the Time magazine downplaying the ultra processed foods?
One of the more amusing things that we've seen is the mainstream media playbook trying to do what they love to do, which is confuse people into thinking that we don't have a grip on reality by saying, what if ultra-processed foods aren't as bad as we think? That was the title of the article. And fortunately, people took to social media in hordes saying, we are no longer standing silent while the media tries to gaslight us into questioning the reality that we know is true, which is that this packaged food is trash. And I'll just briefly run through what the media does to make us question our reality about food. They deny the science and seed confusion. They always will invoke social justice, which they did in this article, to shut down conversation. They said, this is what people in America are eating. If you take it away, what are they going to eat? Without talking about the fact that our system is rigged to make this food cheaper and more accessible to marginalized populations and is hurting them. And we could change the policies to make healthy food cheaper. So we seed confusion. We invoke social justice to shut down conversation. They normalize ultra-processed foods, talk about, oh, well, this is 70% of the calories Americans are eating and we are fine. We're not fine. We are almost universally chronically ill. And the fourth thing they do is they do not mention the conflict of interest of the scientists and the nutritionists that they cite in the article. So this is the four-part playbook that media uses to confuse us about nutrition. But we all know what the reality is. The reality is that these ultra-processed foods are not good for us and we need to get back to real food.
And let's hope, Casey, that this comes up in the debate. Because
me too. And the good news is Time article changed. Time magazine changed the title to a different title because social media was an outrage. So our voices matter.
Absolutely. So does yours. And so does your brother's. Dr. Casey Means, pick up her book if you haven't yet. Good Energy, the Surprising Connection Between Metabolism and Limitless Health. Casey, great to thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Your call is just around the bend.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's so great I could talk to Dr. Casey Means. You know, she's built for three-hour podcasts, but I hope you got that information. It matters. I think President Trump should make this a huge part of his stump speech. Brent in Nebraska. Hey, Brent.
Hey, Brian. An honor to talk to you. Love your show.
Thank you.
Do a lot of good work. Keep fighting the good fight.
How do you feel about her bringing up the farmers? You're a farmer, right?
Yeah, I am out in Nebraska. And I guess I took exception to the farm subsidies. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about how farmers get farm subsidies and all this stuff. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, we're getting the same for a bushel of corn and a bushel of beans today as they did 30, 40 years ago. And I don't know anybody that would work for the same wages they had 30 or 40 years ago. And without those farm subsidies, it makes it pretty tough. When you put a tractor and a planter full of seed and fertilizer and go across the field, you got over $1 million worth of equipment and inputs in that crop.
Hey, Brent, I think this is what you were saying, though. Not the subsidies are bad. Is it what they're subsidizing you to do? To make some of the material, some of these processed food, the material to make some of the processed food that's getting us sick. That's her point. The corn syrup and things of that nature. Do you understand what she was saying there?
Yep, I understand. It's out of our hands because we're controlled by the Chicago Board of Trade, too.
So they'll tell you what to grow?
They give you incentives and they have programs to basically force you to have to grow certain things.
So interesting. Brent, thanks so much. There's so much I don't know about farming, but I appreciate it.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here for the final hour of this show, or one of the final hours of the show, depending on what market you're in. And thanks so much for listening. Stuart Varney's coming up a little bit later. And then Jimmy Johnson, Fox football analyst, Fox NFL Sunday. He's all set to go for another great season. And I was talking to him behind the scenes, too. He is all pumped up for this year. And one thing he did tell me, too, on the side, and it's something that came up with Armin Kontean last week in his book, The Price, is that he's so glad he's not involved in college football today. Because he would never be able to yell at a guy, never be able to bench a guy, send a message, develop a guy, because he'd be, oh, I'm out of here. Oh, you're not playing me? You recruited me. I'm going. And I'm going to go for more money. That's just not the way the college game was built. It's going to take a lot of adjusting. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I don't believe that either President Biden or anyone serious about achieving peace and achieving the release would seriously ask Israel to make these concessions. We've already made them.
Yeah, I think so too, Mr. Prime Minister. Take it or leave it. Biden team pushes Israel to take a ceasefire deal, or I guess we're leaving the negotiations in Qatar? I don't even get it. Why are you blaming the Prime Minister for a war that Hamas started after they assassinate six innocent hostages, including an American?
Number two.
As a Jewish student, do you feel safe walking around Columbia University's campus?
I do not. I'm a visible Jew. I'm Orthodox. I wear a Star of David around my neck. I know that's putting a target on my back.
That is unbelievable, but the fact. That's Shoshana. She was on Fox and Friends this morning. She protests are aplenty in New York, uptown, Columbia University, just like last year. They're inside, they're outside. They're spraying red paint on the Columbia statue outside. Horrible things they're chanting for Israel, for Hamas to resist and for Israelis to die.
Number one.
I think it's a sign of a good leader that they learn and evolve over time. You know, whether it's a move to the middle, the left, the right, it's really about what works. Kamala Harris is a pragmatic leader.
That is not true, but Governor Polis is paid to do that or told to do that. Tracking the trail. Harris is avoiding interviews and formal policy statements. She's heading to New Hampshire today, then debate camp in Pennsylvania. As Trump and Vance fan out and speak out during any interview and any possibility, they want to get the word out. Tonight, they'll be on with Sean Hannity in a town hall. It'll be interesting. It'll be informative. And you know what? He'll be open, taking questions from audience members. Maybe some aren't fans. It doesn't matter. He'll go into hostile areas. He'll answer questions. Sometimes people don't like it. Sometimes it might hurt him electorally. But for the most part, people appreciate his accessibility. And it's so dramatically different from Harris. But so far, the polls are so close. And she is so uneasy on her feet. I think her people are going to keep her away unless Trump pulls away. She's going to not be forced to put anything on her website that might turn off people, that might hurt her with the women vote, which she's lording over, might help her, that might hurt her with the male vote. She's trailing by about 8 points now. She is losing Hispanic votes. The whole Democratic Party is. It was something that Trump lost 63-36. Now he's up 15 in that over Harris. Pretty significant. Maybe a little less. I exaggerate. 42-37. So that's a lot less. But I think it's important. Kimberly Strassel weighed in on what's going on with the Harris campaign and how they are hiding and also what they're doing with Joe Biden. This guy showing up in Pennsylvania like the crazy uncle, no one has the guts to tell him, we don't need you. In fact, you're hurting me. Not my problem, but listen, cut nine.
They have to roll him out. He wants to take part. You know, if you looked at that speech, it was remarkable. He spoke significantly longer than she did and probably a lot longer than the Kamala Harris campaign would want him to speak. But they're walking that fine line right now. A lot of people still accusing them of throwing him under the bus. He's not necessarily helping her campaign message. He's a reminder of the things that people don't like about this economy at the moment. But again, I'm not sure they can get away with simply excising him from the campaign trail.
So you listen to James Carville, they think, and listen, I'm not there to give him advice, but Carville has been pretty good for Democrats, pointing out that Joe Biden's got to go, and after the debate said he will not survive. But they want, James Carville came out in the New York Times, wrote a column, says, you have an incumbent vice president running against a former president in a change election. From Labor Day to Election Day to clinch victory and drive a nail into Trump's political career, there are three imperatives Harris must pursue successfully. Number one, help Trump hurt himself in the debate. I don't think it's going to happen. Trump's very calm and confident. break from President Trump, Biden on policy. How does that happen? If Trump and Vance let that happen, they deserve to lose. She is all over this. This is all she has. She could go back and run as what? A DA? An AG? A senator? Good luck. Where she was known as the most liberal senator, most socialistic senator in the Senate, left of Bernie Sanders, display a clear growth mindset from 2020's Democratic primary. Okay, how do you do that? While running from what you've done, you say about what you will do nothing and say it's nothing like what I did. I don't know if the American people can get their minds around that. It even hurt for me to say it. While walking away from the press with your headsets on, say as if you're on a call. The phony calls they have with Waltz and the dumb cooking videos, which would be fine if there was some real interviews on top of that. Remember, Barack Obama did Ellen, but he also did 60 Minutes and Bill O'Reilly and Bret Baier and talked to these people. That's what made it work. And then when people were still critical of Bill Clinton for hopping on with Arsenio Hall in the 90s, but he did real interviews regularly at the most horrific times after his horrible affairs. But meanwhile, Harris is doing things. She's not saying, okay, I'm not really going to put any policies out there. I'm going to change. She's changing it through other people. For example, border wall, she's for decriminalizing border crossings. She is now not for that. Medicare for all, not going to do that, even though that ticks off people like Ro Khanna, Bernie Sanders, the whole squad. Makes me think that she doesn't mean it. Has to explain it, don't you think? Is she going to say, I found out it's too expensive? I'm going to say that I talked to some people on Medicare. It would hurt the quality of care. It would hurt the medical profession. I wouldn't get the quality doctors. Or whatever the answer is, don't just say it's not popular. Or you could say that. Mandatory gun buybacks. She was for that. Mandatory gun buybacks. Fracking. Now she's for it. Really? But are you going to limit it to the point where it's barely effective? And offshore drilling. She has hijacked no tax from tips. She's hijacked to the wall. She's hijacked going out against U.S. Steel. Listen to her over the weekend on Labor Day talking to union members. Cut one.
U.S. Steel is an historic American company. And it is vital for our nation to maintain strong American steel companies. And I couldn't agree more with President Biden. U.S. Steel should remain American-owned and American-operated.
Well, evidently, it's going to Japan, and he approved it. So what are you talking about? I agree with President Biden. If he changed his mind in front of that audience, good luck. Should someone tell him that he's still president? I know he's on the beach a lot. And I know he doesn't really do the job often and works about 3 hours a day. That's before he was told he can't work anymore. So Governor Jared Polis saw everything that I just said. Saw all the changes, the flip-flops. Sees he doesn't put out policies, just fragments of policies. She had an economic speech 2 weeks ago. It was a disaster between price controls and price gauging instead of gouging. People walked away going, what the hell is that? Cut four.
I think it's a sign of a good leader that they learn and evolve over time. I think what's key with regard to economic issues is making sure that we have additional tax relief for most American families, especially those making under $400,000 a year, families making $50,000 a year, families making $200,000 a year. They're getting the short end of the stick. We need to reduce taxes. Her tax credit package does that. Whether it's a move to the middle, the left, the right, it's really about what works. Kamala Harris is a pragmatic leader who looks at data and science and makes the best decisions she can.
I was Governor Polis. That's fine. But you said it. She didn't say it. She didn't say this is why I changed. This is how I changed. And if she said it because I realized my ideas weren't as popular, I would prefer it as I looked at the numbers and I saw what the practicality of running a country were like and the need for fossil fuels in today's society, saw the progress we're making through technology and thought a free market would be where I'd like EVs or hybrids to prevail, where I'd like our grid to evolve. But right now it wouldn't work. How can I leave our allies with the Ukrainian war raging without natural gas? Newt Gingrich, cut 12.
We're in a very dynamic environment. This is not a Polaroid snapshot. I believe that she peaked the night of her acceptance speech. And if you remember, Michael Dukakis peaked at 17 points ahead. She was probably at best two or three points ahead, and that was her momentum. And she's been losing ground ever since. They're not going to Virginia, New Hampshire, and Minnesota for fun. They're going because they're beginning to see the margin of their own states crumble. They're seeing all three of those states move into contention. I think New Mexico will be next because the oil and gas industry is so big down there.
I would love to see more of an operation. Governor Youngkin told us last week on this show that he thought Youngkin was in play, Virginia was in play. I agree. And I would agree, too, in New Hampshire, because especially the way Joe Biden blew them off and said South Carolina will be my first primary. I thought for sure that would be. Now, Harris is a little bit more popular there. And I thought that Haley, Governor Haley, would be a huge help for President Trump there. Maybe she's back and willing to help out. I'd be very curious to see that. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Great interview with Jimmy Johnson. We take a break from politics. Talk about NFL coming back tomorrow night in Brazil.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. In about 10 minutes, we're going to hear from Stuart Varney, talk about the economy. Thanks so much for listening all day long. Keep in mind, too, I am going to be in Peekskill over in New York, just outside the city with History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour, BrianKilmeade.com, VIP tickets. This is where I get the chance to hang out with you before the show, answer your questions. And I'll be talking about everything from George Washington's Secret Six, Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates, Andrew Jackson, the Miracle of New Orleans, Sam Houston, the Alamo Avengers, the President and Freedom Fighter, and Teddy and Booker T. And I'll just get you how do we win the war on history that we're experiencing now. If Trump gets back in office, they're going to have Project 1776. I'll feel better. If not, we're going to have to fight for every statue. So having said that, I had a chance to talk to Jimmy Johnson on Fox and Friends. So Jimmy Johnson, as you know, longtime University of Miami coach, Dallas Cowboy coach, and Miami Dolphins coach, has been a stalwart on the desk with Terry Bradshaw, with Michael Strahan, with Howie Long, and Kurt Menefee for years now, for a couple of decades. He is more pumped up for this season than any other. A couple of reasons. There's a lot of redemption projects. Caleb Williams is fantastic quarterback. It looks the way he looks pro-ready for the Bears. But I also think that when you have Aaron Rodgers coming back and the Jets with enough talent to get to the playoffs first time, when you got Russell Wilson, who looked like a Hall of Fame quarterback and fell apart in Denver, and when you see a lot of other quarterbacks and a lot of storylines, you can't wait for the season to start. So for Fox, it starts on Sunday. For the NFL, it starts in Brazil on Thursday. Here's my interview with Coach Jimmy Johnson. Let's listen.
NFL's officially back, if that didn't give it away. And the Cleveland Browns host the Dallas Cowboys in Fox Sports Week 1 Game of the Week. Now, the Cowboys, led by Dak Prescott for now, hold a slight advantage heading into the season, but they'll have to take on Cleveland's explosive defense and powerhouse defensive end Myles Garrett. Fox NFL analyst Jimmy Johnson, one of the many great ones in the Fox portfolio, joins us now. Coach, you told me in the break you're pumped up for this season as any. Why?
Well, first of all, before we get into that, we got a lot of football to talk about. But, hey, congratulations on getting the Good Boy Award. I've been trying to get that for years. that is quite an honor.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm as excited about this season as I've ever been. There's so many storylines, all the quarterbacks, the rookie quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Prescott, of course, the soap opera in Dallas, Tom Brady doing the telecast. You know, I think Tom's going to be great.
So 2 years ago, he walks off the field. Then he went up to Eric Shanks and said, I need another year. I thought, oh, maybe he's not going to want to do this. But you have seen the work ethic that he's put in. What have you noticed? Because you've seen a lot of great players try to go to the booth. Troy Aikman's fantastic, but he's almost a rarity. What's your sense on Brady?
You know what? Being around him, you know, really for the last year or so, he talks to Terry Bradshaw. Okay, Terry, what do you think? Bang, bang, bang. You know, he's talked to Troy. You know, he's really done his preparation. I think he's going to have great stories. I think he's going to have great insight. You know, of course, he's one of the greatest players that ever played the game, the most successful player to ever play the game. I think he's going to be great in the booth.
Well, I think there too, and if it turns out, I didn't know this, he took notes on every game that he played. So we can look back on those games and wonder what his decisions were. And you just got to be quicker in the booth, which I'm sure he'll get. So, Coach, you got that first game, Dallas and Cleveland. Dallas is coming out 12-5, Cleveland 11-6, and we're looking at Deshaun Watson. Do you still a believer that he's got great football left in him? Because he hasn't shown it.
Well, you know, he had such a long layoff, you know, to where he wasn't playing. Plus, he's had some injuries. But I think that's the key to Cleveland. You know, Cleveland's got a great defense. They've got some great players. As long as they get production at the quarterback right. position, you know, I think they're going to have an outstanding team. And, of course, going against the Cowboys, I think when you look at the starting lineup for the Cowboys, they're as good as anybody. And they have shown that during the regular season. Now, can Dak Prescott play well in the big games? It's going to be an interesting game. I don't, you know, I know that Cleveland's favored at home, but I think it's a toss-up. But it's going to be a great ball game.
Right. Dak Prescott, are you sold that he can win the big one? Because it doesn't sound like Jerry Jones is. He said something to the effect of, I've stopped listening to Jerry Jones a long time ago. Your thoughts about your buddy, your college buddy?
Well, you stopped listening to Jerry Jones. A lot of us have. but I've talked to Jerry a few times. I think he's trying to put everybody on the incentive plan. You know, Mike McCarthy's in the last year of his contract. Of course, Prescott, you know, they haven't gotten a contract done yet after this year. So I think he's trying to get everybody saying, hey, you know, people have said that we were comfortable, too comfortable here right. in Dallas. Now he's putting people on the edge. I don't think they're comfortable right now.
Okay, real quick. So the games at 4 o'clock is going to be great. Your pregame show starts at 12 Eastern. If I was to pick one player and a redemption tour, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, or Aaron Rodgers, who would Jimmy Johnson say is most likely to go back to his greatness?
Oh, you know, I'm interested to see on Aaron Rodgers, you know, with the Jets. But I think the big thing, you know, the Cowboys are, you know, they are such a visual team. They want to see what Dak Prescott's going to do in this big ball game. So, you know, we got to be following the Cowboys.
All right, kickoff's at 4:25. The game will start at 4. Brady in the booth is going to be fantastic. We do have the best scoreboard show in the history of football. You know that. And you guys get along fantastic. It's like the old boys network. Thanks so much. I appreciate Jimmy Johnson. Have a great season. We'll talk to you again soon. And I'm sorry, if you can have Canton, I'll keep the good boy award, all right?
Thank you, Brian. Okay, going to be a big one Sunday.
It is going to be great, and make sure you watch.
So up next is going to be Stuart Varney of FBN. You know he hosts the show every day on that great network. We talk about the economy. We talk about the fragmented proposals from Kamala Harris and what it means and what the shape of our economy is now, even if there is a cut in interest rates. What will that do? Because we know there was an epic fail yesterday on the market. And a lot of people around the world, when we coughed, everyone else got the flu. So we'll talk about that means. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Day one, it's going to be about, one, implementing my plan for what I call an opportunity economy. I've already laid out a number of proposals in that regard, which include what we're going to do to bring down the cost of everyday goods, what we're going to do to invest in America's small businesses, what we're going to do to invest in families.
All right, good. She's going to run the opportunity economy because a lot of people don't want to give opportunity to people in the economy. I think she is smart to want to give it now that she's only been vice president for 3.5 years. That is Kamala Harris, and she does not have anything on her website. It's got 4 or 5 principles, so we thought we'd bring in an economic expert with the number one show on FBN in here, Stuart Varney. You are for an opportunity economy, right, Stuart?
Brian, of course one is for an opportunity economy. What kind of immigrant do you think I am?
Right, of course, an opportunity economy.
Come on. The point is, you don't give an opportunity economy. It's not like, it doesn't work like that. Kamala Harris wants to just chuck out public money to be absorbed by working people, and that, she thinks, creates an economy that which is full of opportunity.
Right.
That's not the way you do it. You grow the economy. You expand the economy. You give tax cuts. You make it grow. You improve profitability. That's an opportunity economy. You take away DEI, and you go for meritocracy so that People with brains, drive, talent, and ability can rise to the top by their own individual efforts. That's individual liberty and freedom. She's doing the exact opposite. It's top-down, giving away taxpayer money, which she thinks creates opportunity. It does not. They're contradictory.
Well, I mean, just with the only thing she's really talked about, she gave that speech a couple of weeks ago on that Friday about here are my economic principles, one of which is price controls. She got blowback. They were indefensible on the Sunday shows. Well, no one even knew, on her side knew even how to defend it.
It's been tried before, and it fails. Every time they try it, it fails. You cannot just wave a magic wand and say, grocery prices will go down.
Right.
And if they don't go down, we will make sure that your excessive profits are taken away. What's excessive? Who decides what's excessive? Some government bureaucrat who says, oh, that's excessive, we're going to do that down? No. This is a politicized person. It's entirely political. Hoping to appeal to maybe the jealousy of lower income people.
Right.
Look at those rich people. They're making all that money. We're going to give you money, and that's the way you get back at
it. Well, if you look at the DNC, instead of saying, look at Barack Obama, the success he's had after he's run for office, where he came from, meager means, single parent, most basically ran from his grandparents, they railed against, especially Michelle Obama, generational wealth. And that we, you know, basically that those people have had their wealth, they're holding on to it. They don't want to give us an opportunity.
They want to tax wealth. They see the stock market has expanded dramatically. They know that some people have gotten very rich out of it, and they want a piece of that action. So they will take it off you with this. It's essentially a wealth tax.
Yeah.
And it's born of jealousy. The problem here is not that there are some people who are very, very rich. The problem is that the government is spending too much money. That is creating inflation. That destroys opportunity for working people. A wealth tax, can you imagine that? You're supposed to add up. Okay, they say it's only appealing to people with $100 million or more, but it always comes down from there.
Right.
You're supposed to add up all your assets, the value of all your assets, stocks, bonds, houses, artwork, put it all together in one big number, and then they'll take a percentage out of it. Whether you've sold that stock, whether you've sold the house, it doesn't matter.
But don't they know rich people are going to respond to that and go, really? Okay, maybe I'm not going to buy that art. Maybe I'm not going to buy this.
They don't care, Brian.
But they're not going to get the money.
Care.
But they don't even think it through. That's the crazy thing.
They don't. And they don't care. They think there's more votes in appealing to jealousy than there is to appealing to the billionaires to keep their money.
So she has this revelation about what could be done in the economy. And Dana Bash even brings up to her, why haven't you done it yet? Cut 56.
You have been vice president for 3.5 years. Yeah. The steps that you're talking about now, why haven't you done them already?
Well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%. The work that we have done to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for seniors. Donald Trump said he was going to do a number of things, including allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. Never happened. We did it.
So why hasn't she never answered the question?
That's rubbish. She didn't bring back the economy from the depths of some recession. It wasn't like that. She didn't inherit a terrible economy from Trump. She inherited an economy that had been clobbered by the virus, by COVID. And then she simply, the economy came back. And she's saying that she created 16 million jobs. She did not. 16 million jobs were brought back
right,
after being dismissed because of COVID. She's all wrong on this. Bidenomics did not bring the economy back to a wonderful position. Bidenomics created 9% unemployment, inflation. That's what did it. They chucked out money at it.
Right.
$1.9 trillion. She cast the deciding vote for the American Recovery Act. Chucked $1.9 trillion in there. That created the inflation, which is now beginning to come down, not because of her, but because of market forces.
So the way I understand it, Stuart, so it went up as high as 9%.
Yep.
So all of a sudden now, overall, prices are up 20+%, 22% since they took office. But if your prices go up 9%, the next month they go up 7%, the next month they go up 3%, that's in relation to the 9%. So
yes,
the next month it builds on the 9, the 2 builds on the 3. And am I correct?
Is that the right
way to explain it?
You are correct. What's happening is that the rate of price increases is slowing down, but you're still working off that 9% base. So grocery store prices are still 20% higher than they were before the pandemic. But they're rising at a slower rate. She says, oh, that's killed inflation. Look what we did. That's killed inflation. That is not accurate. And now she proposes to put price controls in place, which she thinks will bring down prices. Ain't going to happen.
Right. What happens is if you're going to charge me a certain amount for celery and I go, okay, I'll buy it, but I got to build a profit into it. I have a supermarket. And they go, no, you're not allowed to charge. So wait a second. I'm not going to buy it from the guy with the truck at $2. If I can only charge one, keep it on the truck. Let it leave. Yeah. Because I'm not going to put it on my shelf and take a beating every single time.
You've got to allow profit. You've got to allow profit. If you don't allow profit, if you control price, you end up with shortages. Why should that celery ever appear on the market? It doesn't. It's not profitable to even grow it and transport it, so you don't do it. You've got a shortage of celery.
59. Cut 59.
I will work to pass the first ever federal ban on price gauging on food. My plan will include new penalties for opportunistic companies that exploit crises and break the rules.
Can you understand? Can you believe this?
Well, it's gouging, not gauging.
Right. That's to start with. She actually believes that inflation is caused by greed. Greedy corporations making excessive profits.
It's illogical.
That's utter nonsense.
But it's illogical, too.
It's supply and demand.
Right.
That's what it is.
And the thing is, if I'm gonna gouge you, you're not going to shop for me because somebody else is not going to gouge. I'm going to go to that place.
Right.
And if you're going to take advantage of a community, that's a problem. But the other thing that I think is so interesting is that, like, I remember after Sandy, I used to walk around sometimes in my neighborhood. We used to notice the few pizza places that were open, they were twice, you know, almost twice as much. I got it. You know, people know you never know where to go. It's not right. It's the ugly part of a free market. And they came down. Some people in the neighborhood are still bitter towards those people that gouged their prices at the time. I'm not saying it doesn't exist.
How many times have we seen gas prices go up and the Democrats call for an investigation into price gouging at the pump? I must have seen 10 or 20 of these in my life in America. They never prove price gouging because that's not the problem. It is supply and demand. That's what the problem is.
That's what it seems. But it just goes to show, too, that what Stephen Moore did earlier this week, he looked at the people at Treasury. And he wanted to know what their backgrounds were. Almost none of them have a business background. First off, for you personally, how valuable has it been for you to host your show, having been involved in different businesses and different economic backgrounds? How much more valuable is that for you?
I understand running a business. I understand profit and loss. I understand meeting a payroll. Democrat politicians are ideologues. They do not understand. They don't want to understand what's at stake for business. Look, we had a businessman as the president, Donald Trump. He was good at business, and he was good at running the economy. He really did produce an exceptional economy. Tax cuts, low prices, low inflation, low interest rates. That was an economy worth having. It's the other way around with the Democrats, who have no experience of running a business. They have no experience of profit and loss and meeting a payroll. They don't understand what's going on with business. They simply want to bash it because it looks good politically. They think that if they go after the billionaires, they encourage this jealousy that somehow or other that's a vote winner. And it may well be a vote winner, but it's not an economy winner.
Which is weird because if I'm president of the United States, and let's say I'm famously George H.W. Bush, John McCain, we're not big on the economy. Now, they never, okay, they're great foreign policy guys, obviously. So what I would want to do if I want to have a successful administration is I want to have the best business people around. I got to fill my weakness in. Why wouldn't, if you're Treasury Secretary, would you not want the people that have their ear to the ground in business just to be successful? Be selfish about it.
Well, because they're jealous, because they're Democrats, they're neo-socialists. They don't care about business. They hate business. All they want to do is take away from business, and they think that taking from business and giving to the workers, somehow or other that works. But it does not work.
But isn't it illogical? Because it's like saying, I love that car, but I don't want to put gas in it.
It's all about politics, Brian. It's politics. That's what it is. Democrats believe that appealing to jealousy, hatred of the rich, hatred of business, that's a vote winner. And they may well be right. That's all they're interested in.
Right.
You think they want to produce a dynamic, growing, profitable economy? No. They want to produce an economy where they win votes.
So over the weekend, I tried to get you on the panel, but we did a special. And I did one of the first 14 minutes just to be on this, what the Trump tax plan did and didn't do and what they've been accused of. He says that the common refrain is that Trump gave a tax cut to his billionaire friends on Wall Street. Now that we've had this tax reform in place since 2018. What do we know about what it yielded?
It yielded increased income for every single income group. It yielded economic growth of extraordinary proportions. And it encouraged a lack of, the big deal here was lack of regulatory cuts. He cut red tape, big time. He cut red tape. He made things easier to do. You could get on. You could climb that food chain. You could develop things. You could build things because the permitting process was not removed, but restricted. It was less restrictions.
Especially with energy, right?
Especially with energy. Drill, baby, drill absolutely worked. Now, if we had that again, we could vastly expand our production of nat gas and oil in this country and have a real energy independence all over again. That's what Trump is offering.
But see, I hear when it comes to energy, even though we're producing all-time highs, we're not close to maximizing our production.
Not even close. Not even close. And by the way, recent court decisions, will put a real crimp on America's energy ability to create new oil and gas. They're going to cut off oil and gas drilling and in the Gulf of Mexico, and they've stopped a permit for a liquefied natural gas project. That sends a chill down
Where?
Investors.
Is that in Alaska?
In Louisiana.
Oh, Louisiana.
Yeah. They've stopped it. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, I think it is, they turned around and said, no, you've not borne in mind environmental justice. Therefore, that project cannot proceed. That sends a chill throughout the energy industry because who's going to put money into a project which might be canceled?
Right.
You lose your money.
So no bank is going to back it up. Oil and gas companies don't finance their own stuff for the most part.
Harris doesn't need to ban fracking. She doesn't need to encourage fracking. Her pals in the environmental business, the climate guys, they're going to do that job for her by going to court. And they've just done it. And unless we get a reversal of those court decisions and a reversal of the permitting process, which we can only get through Trump, unless we get that, America's energy needs are stalled.
Right.
The environmentalists win.
Right. So when he says oil and gas will benefit, yeah, because there's not going to stand in their way. But it doesn't mean if you have innovation in an economy, if there's a way to green it. I also see, and I don't know if you've seen this, they have evidently $400 million, maybe more from the Inflation Reduction Act they haven't spent. So they're trying to rush in and spend on these green projects that might not be ready and give to companies that might not be worthy because they got to quickly get it out in case Trump wins.
What they're doing is they're putting money into subsidies for in EVs, for example, and subsidies into battery plants. What they should be doing is putting the money into innovation. I draw your attention to Meta, which is building these giant data centers. They've got a new project where they drill down into the hot rocks in the center of the earth or down there, 1,000 feet down, pump water in, it boils, explodes to the top, drives electric generators, fossil fuel free, no CO2 emissions, endless supply of this energy. That's innovation, and it's being done by Meta, of all people, a big tech company, not by the government.
More power to you.
Absolutely.
Pun intended.
And they want to break up America's crown jewels, the big tech companies. I understand some of that thinking. But it's only them that's got the money for the innovation for green energy, and they're putting it to work, and we should back them.
Absolutely. Stuart, when do we listen to your show? When do we watch your show?
9 a.m. Eastern Time through 12 noon Eastern Time, Monday through Friday.
It's a really tough situation for my audience because...
Am I competing with you?
You are competing with me normally, but I got you a special
exemption. You're killing
exemption.
Me, Brian. You're killing me.
I know. But thanks so much for the simulcast. We love it. So does our audience.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Brian Kilmeade Show on this Wednesday. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. To know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
By the grace of God, Ricky Pearsall is here with the team and doing really well. And just wanted to address that situation from a team perspective. We just all feel incredibly blessed. Was able to be down at the hospital, and if I heard it from one person, I heard it from so many down there. It's nothing short of miraculous that he came out of this as good as he did.
And that is John Lynch, the Hall of Famer, who is the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers, talking about the survival of Ricky Pearsall. Purcell's health after he was shot in the chest when they tried to steal his Rolex watch. That was just moments ago. He's doing really well. and he should make a full recovery. It's just amazing what's happened in San Francisco. And also, we hear it all. Ucho Cinco came out and just said, you know what? Nothing is worth your life. But then again, when you're challenged, you're not thinking about that. You just want to survive. Next, Taylor Swift appears to be really entering into the offensive coordinator role with the Kansas City Chiefs. Travis Kelce made that revelation yesterday on the Rich Eisen Show. Listen.
She has just been so open to learning the game. She didn't know much about the rules and everything. And I think what makes her so good in her profession is that she's so detailed in every aspect of it, from the words to the music to, you know, even the releases and the music videos and everything. She's so detailed and a part of it that I think she was just curious about the profession.
So she is now a very good student, probably won't be the offense coordinator, but will be at every game and be a great distraction. Next, that trend, the Aragua gang that was all over Aurora, and the governor says it's Aurora, Colorado. The governor of Colorado says it's no big deal. Well, it turns out four people with possible connections to that transnational gang were arrested. Meanwhile, they were at least two Barton buildings in Aurora. They had taken over, according to surveillance video. It was a big deal. It will always be a big deal. Real quick, Musk's Starlink will block X in Brazil to comply with the judge's order. Kind of a scary thing. X's Twitter, obviously. Elon Musk has Starlink, obviously. If you're going to ban it in Brazil, how soon till it's banned here by maybe President Kamala Harris, who realizes Elon Musk likes Trump better? Brian Kilmeade Show.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.